I always think it's so cool when I get a guest on the show that really isn't affiliated with law enforcement, not part of the criminal justice field, but they provide so much value to the criminal justice listener like yourself. I mean, it truly is amazing. And often I get guests who say, well, how am I going to connect with your audience? How am I going to provide value? And I don't think I've ever had a guest that isn't part of the law enforcement field that hasn't provided value. If you think of somebody who hasn't provided value, please shoot me an email. You're going to love the next guest, New York Times bestselling author, Brad Lominick. Hello, hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the CJ Evolution Podcast. Patrick here. I sure do appreciate your support. That's why we continue to grow. Because of you, the listener and supporter, sharing it with family and friends. Thank you so much. If you head over to iTunes, rate and review this show. 5-star rating, we sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working out there in the criminal justice field, whatever you're doing in that field. Maybe you're a police officer, sheriff's officer, or sheriff deputy. Maybe you're working in corrections. Maybe you're on probation, parole, whatever you're doing. Thank you for doing such a fantastic job. You have much support. So excited to have Brad Lominick on the show. He is, let me see, a leadership expert. He's a motivational speaker. He riles people up. He's a change agent. He is everything, and you're going to love him. He's the author of The Catalyst Leader and H3 Leadership. Humble, hungry, and hustle. I love it. You're going to love it. Stay tuned for Brad Lominick. Very excited to have my next guest on the show, Brad Lominick. Braddy, there, sir.
I'm here.
Well, thank you.
Good to be on, Patrick.
Well, thank you. I know it's very busy, especially the weekend, and I appreciate you taking the time. You talk to so many people out there, Brad, and I love your message. I love your work. I wanted you to talk about your work. But how did you get started with what you're doing right now?
Yeah, well, my story is definitely one. You look at all the dots that are connecting, you go, really? Like, that's how they connected? Real quick, history major in college at University of Oklahoma. And then I spent a few years actually in close to you, not far from you in Colorado, working on a guest ranch of all places, playing cowboy, taking people out on rides in the Rocky Mountains, 140 horses, wow. You know, really learning like hospitality and taking care of people. And obviously there's no connection whatsoever between what I studied and what I was doing at that point. But I met some guys who became my next employer. And these were guys who were, they were doing management consulting, and I had no experience in anything in the business world, but I met these guys and I thought, you know what? I really like them. I don't really know what they do, but I like them. And it was this lesson for me of, especially in your 20s, it's way more about who you're around than really what you're doing. And so I went and joined them. And one of our clients was John Maxwell, and John Maxwell's organization, which was doing big leadership conferences. And many of your listeners, I'm sure, have read or heard John Maxwell at some conference. I mean, he's sort of the grand poobah in many ways of modern leadership. And I started doing some work with John's organization. I just really was interested again in him, and also the idea that you could use leadership to impact people. And I'd always sort of leaned into leadership as a student and growing up and all the things I'd done, but I never really saw it as an industry. And so, you know, classic case, the consultant becomes an employee. So I joined John's organization. And for a bunch of years, that was really, for me, what built my career, I guess you could say, as a leadership author, curator, conference creator, aggregator of voices. And so for the last 20 years, Patrick, that's what I've really been doing, is putting leaders in environments where they can learn. And it's events, conferences, workshops, curriculum, writing books, trying to, again, be really an aggregator in that space. And so, you know, I'm just getting started, I feel like, in terms of trying to make sure that my voice is part of the many voices in the leadership space. And there's a lot of great ones that are out there doing great stuff. And I just want to be, you know, part of the conversation and sit at that table.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're at that table. There's no doubt you're at that table. Now, you talk to so many people, hundreds of thousands of people, Brad. I mean, and you hear all these different stories from people within their organizations, maybe personally. What are some of the, because we all talk about leadership. We all want to be leaders. We all want to, you know, be great people for our organizations personally. But why do so many people
it seems the people I talk to, and you talk to many people, it seems like they're failing. They're not reaching those goals. They're not becoming the leader that they need to be for personally or professionally. What do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of people think that leadership is about people following you, and it is. Mm-hmm. But really, at the epicenter, you know, the sweet spot of great leadership and great leaders is that they lead themselves well. Mm-hmm. And we all think, well, I've got to go out and find followers, and I've got to create something that people will get behind me. And that is, again, that's true, but you've got to start with yourself first. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't lead yourself well, then you're not going to be able to lead others well. And I've seen that around great leaders I'm around. They are ruthless about leading themselves. And that sounds somewhat vague, but you know, what it looks like is that you're getting better. You're voracious in regards to your hunger for learning. You know, you never arrive. You always have a posture that says, man, everybody around me is now not just a classroom, but they're feedback to me. Mm-hmm. They're going to help me get better. And so, you know, my theory on this, Patrick, is that there's too many folks today, especially, that they're thinking about the external pieces of leadership, and they need to be thinking about the internal pieces. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's character, it's integrity, it's self-awareness, it's vulnerability, it's humility, it's the hunger piece, and all the other pieces will take care of themselves. If you start with that and you really like dive deep, even if people are following you, again, the great leaders today, the ones who have lots of influence, I think, and the right kind of influence, are the ones, if you look deep inside of their rituals, their habits, their daily sort of routine, you'll find that they're always working on themselves. Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be, at least in my experience, Brad, in some organizations, and I'm just speaking for myself, that, you know, sometimes, you know, it amazes me how many people rise to the level that they're at, and they're not viewed as great leaders, and they don't put others first, and they're not looking at them. They're not looking internally to make some changes. It always amazes me, even after, you know, 20 something years being in the business, how those people manage to rise to the top. Not all the time, but sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and it is true. Many times you can beat the system, you know, yeah. And I put system in quotations, like you can outsmart it. You can outmaneuver it. You can brown nose your way to the top. You can lead with a strong hand of dictatorship. You know, like there's ways that still in certain industries, especially in certain categories of organizational life, like that still works. But I would say, again, next generation, and that's really who I'm watching. And
sure.
the 20 and 30 somethings, like they are starving for leaders who have that sense of self-awareness, who are vulnerable, authentic, honest, real. They're humble. They understand it's not about them. There's a bigger story happening. And, you know, if you look at the organizations, especially that seem to be, I would say, winning today, there are exceptions, but I would argue that the leaders, and it doesn't always have to be the leader at the top. That's another, you know, that's another thing about leadership that's not true, is that everybody thinks, well, I'll start leading once I am in charge. And reality is no, you lead from wherever you are because you have influence.
Yep.
And great organizations, they allow people at any level to actually have great influence. And, you know, the great leaders are the ones who look at the front lines and say, that's where the power is. Like my job is to elevate the frontline worker or the person closest to the problem to be able to, you know, allow them to speak up and actually create change.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one example. Like if you're that frontline worker, part of your job in leading up, and meaning frontline, that you're closest to the problem. If you are in an organization that has a good culture, the culture will allow you to influence because you're close to it. And you say, listen, I know I'm not in charge, but I feel like I can solve this issue.
Sure.
And if you have a good leader, they're going to look at you and go, yes, that is exactly right. Hierarchy will not allow us to sort of rule you out of the conversation. And that's just one example,
yeah.
I think, of the things that are changing in leadership slowly, but surely, I think, you know.
Yeah, there's a great book out there. I'm sure you've heard of Robin Sharma, who has a great book out there. I've read several times, A Leader That Had No Title. That everybody in the organization is a leader. And I, to your point, Brad, I mean, when I was in law enforcement, just because, and I think millennials get kicked down a lot, but I mean, even the younger officers just coming in, they're new, but some of them have some amazing ideas that kind of, I mean, like you're talking about the change agents, and we can get into that, but we can't just discount them because they're young. Well, I mean, they're bringing fresh ideas. We need to listen to them.
Yeah, I'll give you another recommendation just on a good book, Leading When You're Not in Charge. Mm-hmm. And that's the title. And it's by a guy named Clay Scroggins, who's a friend of mine in Atlanta. He's actually a pastor, but all the principles in the book are very applicable to any industry. And he writes about this whole idea of, you know, when you're second or third or on down the line, how do you actually lead up? I think Stanley McChrystal's book, Team of Teams, is another great one, mm-hmm. you know, that especially from the military, which, you know, this Patrick, like you were in them, you know, I don't know all your story, but I think you spent some time in the military.
Yes.
The new reality says we still have hierarchy and systems because without it, things can get dysfunctional, but within it, there's an ability for people to make decisions and give them the opportunity to stand up and actually influence. You know, I don't just look around and go, well, I'm going to wait on somebody else to tell me what to do. And the leaders, they won't stand for that. People mm-hmm. who are managers, and nothing wrong with management, but those who sort of look at things and say status quo, my job is to maintain status quo. That feels comfortable to them. The leader though, the leader gets really uncomfortable with status quo, mm-hmm. especially if it's not working. If it's dysfunctional, the leader is standing around going, guys, like, is anybody else noticing like this isn't working? Mm-hmm. And leaders will naturally gravitate towards organizations that don't stand for the status quo.
Yeah.
And that's what a change agent is. Like the change agent is somebody who walks in and sees the problem and says, I'm going to do something about this. I may not be in charge. I may not have the title. I may not have the corner office, my feet propped up, drinking a spritzer, but I'm going to do something about it. Right.
Yeah. And, but there's a lot of people on top, Brad, you know, that get so freaked out about that. And they get so,
absolutely.
They're insecure because, oh my God, this person could, you know, make me look bad or take my job. And I always viewed, I retired as a commander. I always viewed one of my big roles as a leader in my organization was to train the person or the officer who's going to replace me, mm-hmm. whoever that is. Because I'm not going to be here all day or, you know, for the rest of my life, obviously. But the flip side of that is I saw leaders, quote, that were freaked out about that. We got to keep those people down there. We can't motivate them. We can't encourage them. We can't empower them to make decisions because I don't want to let go of my power.
Yes. And that's a classic case, I think, of again, many leaders who haven't wrestled down the things internally for them. Mm-hmm. Like I would say, Patrick, the opposite of humility is insecurity. It's not arrogance. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that. I think people say, well, what's an arrogant leader or what's the opposite of arrogant leaders? Well, it's humility. Well, maybe, but the insecurity deep down within people is really where arrogance comes from. Because they're looking around going, I hope nobody finds out that I don't really know what I'm doing, or I'm scared that they're going to take my spot, or I'm fearful. I have a scarcity mentality compared to, no, like I'm very content. Mm-hmm. And the contentment comes from I'm self-aware, but I also realize that the people around me, if I create a great team, they're actually smarter than me. Like they are the ones who can make decisions better than me because they're closest to them. Yeah. And my job is to empower them. My job is not to overrule them or to create fear in them so that they will, you know, stay in place. My job is to actually elevate them. Many times elevate them to places that might even go beyond me.
Yeah.
That's the real leader. He is somebody who is so content. You know, they're so self-aware and confident from their humility that they can watch people flourish around them. And they're okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, they're willing to give credit to other people and allow others to even pass them by.
Yeah. And I always said, and I still say it, I don't want to be the smartest guy in the room, Brad. I don't.
That's right.
I don't want to be the smartest guy in the room. I want to be surrounded by people that are a heck of a lot smarter than me because that's how I learn. That's how I learn. And that's how they become better. You know, we all become better.
And, And it sounds really good on paper, right? Like all of us shake our head and go, Patrick, you're so right. But you look at a lot of organizations and it's Jim Collins, what Jim Collins says in Good to Great. It's, it's a genius with 1,000 helpers.
Yeah.
And that is, you know what? You can get a lot of stuff done as a genius with 1,000 helpers, but you can't reach level 5 leadership, which Collins would say is that balance, the intersection of great humility and great competency.
Yes. I love your book, Brad. You got a lot of work out there, but H3 leadership. I love be humble, stay hungry, and always hustle. Can you elaborate? We just talked about being humble, and it's very important. Some people view that as a weakness. I view it as a strength.
Mm-hmm.
Hungry. What do you mean by that? And hustle.
Yeah, hungry is this posture that you never arrive. You know, it's what John Wooden said, the famous coach of historic basketball coach of UCLA. You know, he said it's what you learn after you know it all. That's what really counts.
Mm-hmm.
And the leaders I admire, Patrick, the ones that I've watched and said, I want to look like that when I get to the finish line, are the ones who still walk in to a conference and they're the main speaker. Everybody's there to hear them, right? They're the big draw. And before they speak or after they speak, they're in the front row with their moleskin out or their phone or their yellow pad. You know, I watched John Maxwell do this for so many years. He still does.
Mm-hmm.
And John is, you know, he's getting invited to speak at these big events and he's the draw, but he's in the front row taking notes. And that idea that even though I know it all, I'm still willing to lean in and have a curiosity.
Sure.
And I think the hunger comes from a place of curiosity, you know, that, and it goes back to being a reader. It goes back to being a learner. It's all those pieces that the idea that I get to the finish line of my life even, and I'm still leaning in, trying to learn. And a lot of us, we kind of give up on learning once we can, because we had to for so many years with school, with university, with whatever the ongoing continuing education units, the CEUs we have to get or whatever. We show up and we're like, get this over with, please. but I watch the leaders that I admire and they're just, everybody's a classroom. Everywhere they go, they've got a moleskin out, literally or figuratively. And the other thing is a good question asker, you know, like people who are good question askers are the ones I think that rise to the top. And then that's in some ways opposite of what we think. We think we have to have the answer, but the credibility comes for you by being a really good question asker.
Sure.
That goes back to curiosity. So that's where I would sort of lean into that idea of hunger, is that you're constantly walking in thinking there's something more for me to get better at. It's the idea that every day I can improve 1% daily.
Yeah, and I love hustle. I remember my parents used to tell me when I was a kid, look, nobody's going to give you anything. Life is not going to give you anything. You have to go out there and work for it. And you know, Brad, you know, sometimes we come across people that have this entitlement mentality where just give it to me, you know, and it's not about that. You know, I have a sign up in my office right now that says hustle until your haters ask if you're hiring.
Ooh, I like that. That's good, man.
So,
and it's got 3 H's in it. I like it.
Yeah, well, I should send you a picture of it. I will.
Yeah.
But it's hustle is so important. And it's a never-ending process, man. I mean, never.
And it is in vogue right now, which I actually kind of like, but in some ways I don't like, because there's a lot of, you know, hashtag hustle, you know, work your guts out, like redline yourself into complete oblivion. And what I'm arguing with hustle is that you work hard when needed and you're willing to crush it when you have to. And your posture is one that says, I will do the hard work that's necessary. Now, here's the other part of hustle, though, that I think is really important. It's hustle in margin. Mm-hmm. It's hustle in Sabbath. It's hustle in collaboration. You know, are you equally as much a hustler as it relates to you building your thing as you are to hustling to help other people build their thing?
Sure.
And are you a hustler as it relates to generosity? You know, are you open-handed? Do you have a posture that says, I'm going to build my thing and then do everything I can to protect it? Or are you looking at it going, I'm going to build something great because I'm willing to work hard, but I'm also going to have a mindset that says, I'm going to give back. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a full picture of hustle.
I love it.
Because if it's only about you, then you're actually disregarding, again, the first H, which is humility. So these three H's have to be like three legs of the stool that are equally balanced, because I know a lot of people, and Patrick, I'm sure you do too. Like, I know a lot of people who are hustlers, but they have no humility. So everything is about them. Every time you talk to them, they're talking about their thing. Mm-hmm. They can't get past sort of the blindness of I'm building my empire. But then I know other people who are incredibly humble, and they realize, you know, it's not about them. There's a bigger story. I'm going to walk in and sort of do the off shucks thing, but they won't get anything done. Mm-hmm. You talk to them and you go, wait, like 6 months ago, you said you were going to launch that podcast, and what's happening? Well, you know, I'm still doing my concepting. I'm still researching. Like, no, go hustle, go get it done.
Yeah.
Go finish it. Go take the ball across the goal line. Like, go make the shot. And so this has to be in balance. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're not able to truly like have our engine of leadership revving at its maximum capacity.
Yeah, I love it. And I want your take on the following, what I'm going to ask you, Brad. I mean, over the last several years, I really, you know, I've got into mindset and, you know, meditating. And I really do believe, and I want your thoughts on this, that what we put out in the universe, we're going to get. Law of attraction. So mm-hmm. getting back to what you were saying, you know, the person who is in it for themselves, you know, they might have some material gain and some material progress, but the universe is not going to sustain that. At least that's what I believe. For very long. They're going to give back to the people who are giving back. You know what I mean? The universe is going to provide for those people who are actually change agents, like we were talking about, giving back. What's your take on that? It's just my view.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. My posture and sort of one of my even life missions is to build platforms that other people can stand on. Mm-hmm. That when somebody says, Brad, what do you do? I'll kind of give them that, you know, I write and I speak and I consult and advise leaders, but then they go, what are you really doing? And I will say my role in life is to build platforms that allow other people to stand on them, to even without me standing on them. Mm-hmm. And I think that because of that posture, it's actually given me a lot more influence. And so I agree with you. Like the idea that your abundance mentality, your generosity, your posture that says I'm willing to allow other people to get the credit. I'm willing to allow other people to win, even if I lose. And I would put lose, you know, again, in quotations, because you're not really losing. Mm-hmm. And if you have a zero-sum game mentality or mindset, then it is all about get yours. And, you know, if I get it, nobody else does. But I don't think that's true. And, you know, for me, there's a faith element to this too, Patrick. Sure. Like, I think that part of our role, especially just as humans, is to help other people flourish. Like Maxwell always told me this, like success is about you, but significance is about others. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Like, I like the idea that, okay, I can win. Like, I can be successful. I can build something. All of us can look at our bank accounts, or we can look at like what we built and the books we've written and people we've impacted. That's success. But significance is when all of that energy carries over to somebody else. And when you've got like all these people in your slipstream who have been impacted by you at a great level, at a deep level, you know, where they want to show up and talk about you at your funeral.
Sure.
You know, that's when I think we're ultimately winning. But it's hard. You know, it's hard because there's still that sense of a lot of people listening to this are going, oh, Brad, like, I feel like I'm still not successful. I feel like I'm still kind of building my thing. And my advice would be to, well, you know, you have to do both of those things. You have to still continue to figure out what is it you want to contribute to the world. But you also have to start to think, well, who am I actually contributing to?
Exactly.
And if you look around at the end of it and you haven't really contributed much to other people, then it, to me, it's a cumulative scorecard that, you know, might be a C minus, mm-hmm. where on paper you might look like an A plus.
Yeah, I mean, nobody cares about, well, I mean, I want to make money just like you do, Brad, but when it comes down to it on your deathbed, I mean, the people regret a lot of things that they didn't do that they should have done, but nobody's going to care whether or not you have a Porsche or a big house. Maybe some people will, but it's about what your legacy, what you're leaving behind, how many people you've impacted, how many people you've helped along the way. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, and that's where, again, as leaders, like we have to start looking at a different scorecard. Mm-hmm. We have to start putting, you know, maybe two lines on the notepad. And one line is, what have you created for yourself? Again, like house, car, influence, like margin, you know, vacation spots. Like, those are all things that impact you. But then when you have the other line on there, or the other column, it's like, what have you done in your community?
Sure.
Like, how many people have you actually made a difference in their lives? How many folks look at you as a mentor, whether you have an official mentoring role in their life or not? You know, what have you done for your neighbors? Those are all the scorecards, again, that go in the significance line.
Sure.
And everybody thinks, well, wait, Brad, don't I have to get successful before I can be significant? No.
No.
If you're 22, like, if you're 16, if you're 12, or if you're 72, we all need to be thinking about significance, you know, and that's where the mindset shift for me, Patrick, happened, like, a little later in life, which I wish it had happened earlier,
because sure.
I would have looked at grade school and said, man, how do I be significant in grade school? How do I make every other kid around me in that fifth grade class flourish and be able to achieve something, compared to, I'm only worried about, you know, whether I get the A in Miss Marzette's, you know, general math class in fifth grade. And that's okay. Again, nothing wrong with that, but that's a mindset shift. And so many times it only happens in fourth quarter of life.
Yeah.
And I want to encourage leaders, like, no, let it happen in first quarter.
I like that.
And second quarter, and third quarter, and fourth quarter.
Now, do you think it's hard, Brad, just with a lot of people, just because of the society we live in right now, where we got social media all over the place every day, and our, you know, and a lot of people are just trying to, oh man, I gotta have this amount of followers, and I gotta be this, and I gotta look this way. I think personally, it's more difficult for people now. Not that that's an excuse, but I think it's like keeping up with the Joneses. Oh, I gotta do this. I gotta look this way. I'm not living my authentic life because I want people to think I'm somebody else.
Yes, it totally is hard. And those are two different things. One is that are you actually allowing comparison mindset to now fuel everything about who you are? And that, man, that is a dangerous cycle to get into, because, you know, everybody else's highlight reel now becomes something that depresses you.
Sure.
And I'm for social media. Like, I love it. I think it's helpful. I don't post a lot, but I just watch other people. It actually has allowed us to be way more connected than we've ever been. But I would say this on the significance side. Okay, if you are building something, then even take Instagram. If some of you are on Instagram listening to this, how many of your posts are about you compared to how many of your posts are lifting up somebody else or highlighting somebody else's work or talking about a product that somebody else built that you really like, and start to move from, okay, I've got a, you know, every fourth post I might have, or every four posts I might have one thing about somebody else. Well, flip that, that now all of a sudden every four posts, I've got three things about other people and one about me. And, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, who is, you know, kind of the king of hustle. And, a lot of things Gary says, I'm kind of like, okay, I sort of like that, but he does have this mindset of jab, 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 right hook.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually his marketing.
Well, it was one of his books, I think. It was one of his books.
Yeah, it is. And I like it as in life though, like that my jab, 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 jabs are elevate others, elevate others, elevate others, elevate others. And then maybe the right hook is, well, here's something I'm working on.
Yeah.
And just that mindset of, I'm going to make it about other people. And then it's, and then maybe at some point I'll, you know, highlight something I'm doing.
Yeah.
But that's where social media, I think, can be a real value to, again, like my tribe, my community, my followers, the digital space that I've created is, that I'm introducing them to things that I think will be helpful for them, regardless of whether it's coming from me.
Yeah. Love it. A couple more questions, sir. What gets you motivated? What just excites Brad?
Well, Oklahoma Sooners football. Does that count?
What about golf? I know you're a big golfer, right?
I am a big golfer.
So what do you think about the Masters, buddy? Who's going to take it?
Well, we are on Sunday of the Masters.
Yes.
First of all, I wish I was there because I've been on Sunday and I didn't go this year, but I don't know. I'm
rooting for Tiger. I got to say it. I'm rooting for Tiger.
Is. I mean, that, you talk about a great comeback story.
Oh yeah.
That's one of the comeback stories in sports.
Did you hear that security guard that ran into him yesterday? Did you see that?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's got to be, man, just birdie this hole.
He's thinking, hope I don't get fired. That's what he's thinking. Yeah. I would say this, I love young leaders today, Patrick. Like, that's something that really energizes me. And at this stage of life, I'm 46. I feel like I'm a translator to the next generation in some ways, in between. You know, I'm a bridge builder between sort of generationally what would be the, you know, the boomers or the older Gen X and now Gen Y, millennials, and Gen Z, who are now coming into college and early adulthood. I feel like that's part of my role is to not just gather young leaders, but actually inspire them and elevate them, you know? So that's what fires me up. Like, I've got a lot of things that I do, that I get paid for, that I find to be sort of the things that organizations ask me to help them on. But the thing that really motivates me is trying to figure out, how do I actually, again, lift the next generation up so that they will run past me and all of my friends and everybody, you know, again, everybody in quotations, but lots of people who are older look at the next generation and they sort of look at it like a dog. When you tell a dog to do something and it doesn't understand you, you know, it kind of turns its head and its ears are sort of like, what?
Yeah.
And I get that, but at the same time, that's part of our job. Part of our job as leaders is to help the next generation coming behind us, whether it's your kids, whether it's your, it's the people you coach, whether it's just a large pool of young leaders in your organization. That's our job.
Yeah.
And that fires me up, man.
Well, and you can't stop it. Right? It's going to happen regardless. So you can either
happen regardless. That's exactly right.
You can either mold and mentor and coach the next generation to be the leader, you know, be better than you, or you can just ignore it and it's going to happen anyway.
And that's a really good point. And to that point, a lot of people will say, well, Brad, like that 25-year-old on our team, they seem so disconnected. They don't walk in and with the same hunger and passion and sort of like blindless enthusiasm that I had when I was 25. And I say to that person, well, okay, that might be true, but your job is now to pull that out of them.
Exactly.
Because they're starving. They're actually starving for somebody to invest in them. They just don't know how to say it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what to say. They fumble around their words and they're like, well, can I text you? And I don't know how to talk to you. But that's where we as older leaders have to step across that bridge.
Yeah.
And I want to be awkward. I want to be the awkward old guy that walks into the room with the young guys and they all kind of look at me and go, well, what's this guy doing here? I'm okay with that. I'm okay being the awkward old guy because I know that when I was that age, I needed that awkward old guy who had wisdom to actually invest in me.
Yeah.
Because if they wouldn't have, then I would still be fumbling around in life, like navigating from thing to thing and disconnected and dysfunctional. And so we just got to change the way we operate and instead see the next generation as our legacy and not see them as something that we feel like is now a threat to us.
I love it. Last question, my friend. What's your morning routine? Do you have one?
I'm a morning guy. So I'm up really early, typically 5:36.
Okay.
I tend to have a quiet time of some sort. You know, I'll sort of, go through scripture. I have sort of a reading plan.
Sure.
I pray like not in the morning, but I pray actually, I'm a runner. So if I'm out running for an hour or more, which I try to do several days a week, you know, I'm thinking, I'm praying, I'm taking notes on podcast. But the first 4 hours for me, Patrick, that's like prime time.
Sure. It's your time.
So it's really like production time. So if anybody's read the book Win by Daniel Pink, I don't know what he calls the person who, you know, is incredibly efficient in the morning, but that's what I am. So anything that I need to get done, anything that's going to require a lot of thinking, work, real competency, I try to do before 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the day is phone calls, it's conversations, interviews, email, administrative stuff. I try to do creative stuff in the afternoon, usually.
Mm-hmm.
But that morning, man, is protected. I don't ever schedule anything before 10 a.m. Nothing.
Yeah.
I love never.
I love my mornings.
Anything on the calendar.
I love my mornings.
And I learned this, Bo, after several years of actually scheduling things in the morning.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize I was actually taking up my best time. And then I would leave the rest of the day to do other things that were harder or thinking things. And I had to flip that. And as soon as that happened, man, it was like, wow, this is a game changer. Are you the same way?
I am the same way, man. I mean, I usually I get up in the morning. First of all, I pray, I'm just so grateful that I'm alive. I mean, I know it sounds corny to some people, but I woke up, I opened my eyes. I have my wife next to me. We have a great life. Not that we live in a bubble. We have our issues and problems, but I'm grateful. And then I usually go downstairs, meditate for about 15 minutes, come up, journal. And this is around 5 o'clock in the morning. Like you, I'm a big morning person. That just comes from being in the military and law enforcement. I've always been a morning person. My wife usually gets up around 9, 8:30 or so. But yeah, my morning is sacred, Brad, like yours. Mm. I mean, I got to have that time. That's what charges me. You know, I mean, I do my stuff for me first before I go out there and start, you know, doing for other people.
Don't you feel like you're ahead? I always feel that way. Like I feel like I've actually got a head start.
Oh yeah. I mean, because you know, I get so much done. Not that I don't get things done with my wife and the stuff we're doing during the day, but when I'm by myself, it seems like I'm accomplishing a lot, things that I want to accomplish for me, which ultimately is for my family. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And then I look at the clock and I've done all this stuff and it's like, you know, 9 o'clock.
what's the old military phrase? We get done more before 9 than most people do all day.
Oh, yeah. We used to get, and then getting back to what we've been talking about, I mean, I remember that you're making me think of the military. You know, I remember hearing this all throughout my military career. Hey, get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because, I mean, you should always be. Now, again, there's variations to that, but it, meaning taking chances, you know, and doing things that some might look at and say, well, that's kind of crazy. Well, I'm doing what I want to do. I'm following my heart, following my passion. So you have to be uncomfortable if you want to succeed. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's good. And just one more thing on the routine. I think routine is actually really important. Mm-hmm. And even if you're if you're somewhat more organic in your approach to life, like you're fluid, you like spontaneity, you're more creative, there's still need for routine. Mm-hmm. Because what routine does, I mean, we've been hearing all this stuff about, you know, Mark Zuckerberg wears the same shirt every day. Mm-hmm. He wears the same outfit every day. There, Nick Saban, you know, the legendary coach at Alabama, he eats the same salad every single day. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, what's the point in that? The point is that he's actually not having to use brain cells or burn calories to decide some of those things. And we all think, well, that's really, like, is that big of a deal? Well, it actually is. And yeah, routine, there's all these scientific experiments and evidence that routine will make you more functional and it allows you to actually get more things done. Mm-hmm. And we probably both have friends who are like, well, Brad, I'm fluid. I like to be creative and let the day just flow. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But I'll promise you, like, when you start comparing routine to non-routine, regardless of whether you're creative or you're logical, you will pretty much always get more done when you have a routine that seems to be consistent.
Yeah.
So that's what I would argue, is just find your routine and stick to it. Cause it will allow you then to have a system that then from the system, then you can have creativity.
Yeah.
Not creativity outside of the system.
I love it. And if Brad, people want to reach out to you, where can they find you? And you got other work out there. You got the Catalyst Leader, Essentials of Becoming a Change Maker. We talked about being a change agent. Wonderful material. Where can they find you and your work, sir?
Yeah, just first and last name. So Brad Lomenick, Lomenick. So that's the website, all the social media outlets. I've got an easy name that I was able to capture. So I don't think there's another one of me in the world. And if there is, reach out, because I'd love to know you're out there.
Well, Brad, thank you so much, sir, for taking the time to come on the show. Much success to you in the future. And we'll see what happens to the Masters. See who comes out.
Hopefully Tiger, but you know what? It's a great day regardless. It's one of the great sporting events in the world. So we'll know, though, after this comes out.
All right, brother. Well,
thanks, Patrick.
Oh, take care of yourself. Bye-bye. So cool having Brad on the show. And we all know right now that Tiger Woods is the Masters champion for 2019. So head out and get Brad's great material. The Catalyst Leader, H3 Leadership, Humble, Hungry, and Hustle. You're going to love it. These books are amazing. And check out Brad again at bradlomanek.com. Stay tuned for more great guests on the CJ Evolution Podcast.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.